The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yeah, and you know what? We are less than a week away from meaningful basketball, and it feels good.
Is that a new intro, too? New year, new intro?
Not quite. It's still the same one we've been
using.
Is
that because, like, before you
the,
hear...
The bumper music is different to open, yeah.
And Steve McPherson, you could always hear when it cut off before Steve McPherson.
Yeah.
And now it's just so much cleaner.
We're gonna get that... we're going to get a fresh new open, though, here pretty soon, hopefully. We'll have to talk to the brass about that, but we'll get her done. Raised by Wolves, by the way, is sponsored by TCL, which is America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And we've got some meaningful basketball to talk about here in a few days as the season is right around
the
corner.
Like the
not quite, but we will have some to talk about here pretty soon as the season's right around the corner. Tuesday, I think, is the first games, right? The 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it should be fun. We've got a guest on, I was going to say on the phone, but he's not on the phone. He's via Skype. He's in Brooklyn.
Sometimes, you know, some podcasts go inside the NBA. We're going to go outside the NBA. I've been sitting on that joke for 3 days. So we have James Herbert of CBS Sports with us today.
James, how you doing, man?
I'm great. Derek, I'm glad you did some preparation for this.
I did, and that's about all the prep I did, actually.
That's all you need.
James, so much to talk about, and we thought, because we had Haley O'Shaughnessy on with us last week, and we talked about the Wolves because she had just done a piece on the Wolves and previewing their season, and we got her thoughts on that, and certainly we'll get yours on them, too. But we really kind of dove deep into the Western Conference as a whole with her. And afterwards, I told Derek, I said, you know, maybe next week we'd dive into the Eastern Conference a little bit more. And then that's when he brought you up and like, hey, let's go for it. So, yeah, we're going to go into the Eastern Conference with you. How far away do you think the Cavs and Celtics are from the rest of the Eastern Conference at this point?
I think that remains to be seen, right? Like, I think the Cavs' ceiling is way, way, way higher than the rest of the East. But you have this Isaiah Thomas injury hanging over the whole season. Like, maybe he'll be back in December, January. When he comes back, we don't know if he's going to be quite himself yet. And then until then, it's this kind of like weird roster of like guys who used to be better, and like they have this new strange starting lineup that like maybe it'll work. They haven't really had a normal preseason because LeBron has been sitting for most of it. And ordinarily the Cavs don't take the regular season super seriously. So while I think they are separated from the rest of the East in terms of how good they can be, I'm not sure they're locked for the one seed at all. And when I look at the Celtics, I think, yeah, they're super talented. And I understand why everybody puts them kind of in a different category than, say, the Wizards or the Raptors, because they have so much more star power. But they lost some really good defenders from last season. They lost basically their entire identity. Like, they have 9 new players. Like, Marcus Smart is the longest tenured Celtic now. So while I really like the composition of the team, I'm not sure if it's going to come together super quickly. So I think it makes sense to look at those teams and say, like, yeah, the best version of the Cavs and the best version of the Celtics, if everything goes right, they're in their own tier. But if you were to tell me that the Wizards were going to win the East or the Raptors were going to win the East in the regular season, that wouldn't shock me.
Well, and you know, too, you mentioned 9 new players for the Celtics, and so many of those are just big pieces. And I look at the Cavaliers, and it's like you said, I think they do have the highest ceiling potentially, but I could also see them having a bit of a tumultuous season, I guess, too, at the same time. I mean, if Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose both view themselves as starters and Isaiah Thomas comes back, or if, you know, he's not ready and misses 45 games, and then they have to ease him in. I mean, there are ways to see problems there. and with, you know, Kevin Love at the starting center, if that doesn't work, there's not like there's a viable option or an ideal option off the bench there to fill in for him.
Yeah, it's strange. Like, it's so important to guard, like, just a simple 1-5 pick and roll in the NBA right now. And the Cavs point guards, like, even when Isaiah comes back, like, you're looking at Isaiah, Derrick Rose, and Jose Calderon guarding the point guard, and Kevin Love potentially being the guy guarding the center. And while I think, like, Love is a better defender than he gets credit for, like, if you watch what he did in the playoffs last year, I think he worked like crazy to be as good as he possibly can be.
Yeah.
On defense, I still think you look at this roster and you're like, all right, well, like when Tristan's out there and Jay Crowder's out there, this can be a versatile, like really good defensive team. I think the ceiling's higher than it was, but they're going to be playing a lot of lineups where it's like Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose are out there at the same time. And I don't know how that works in 2017. Like the Cavs, you use the word tumultuous, like every regular season for them the past few years, even when they've been really good, it has been tumultuous. And I think it'll be the same thing. And there'll probably be long stretches where people are like, what's wrong with the Cavs? What's going to happen? And like, everybody will know, because we've gotten accustomed to this over the past few years, that they are the best team and the most talented team in the East. But I think if they have spells of the season where things kind of aren't working and LeBron is being passive aggressive on Instagram and like whatever, like that shouldn't surprise anyone.
Yeah, it seems like too, a backcourt of Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade, you're going to have some struggles trying to stretch the floor with those two guys back there. Now you're going to have Kevin Love and Jay Crowder. Those are capable outside shooters for you out there too, but it just seems like with those two guys in the same backcourt, there's not going to be a whole lot of spacing.
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked. I thought J.R. Smith would definitely be in the starting lineup. Like even after the Wade signing, I thought, okay, well, maybe they'll just put Wade in there instead of Derrick Rose. And then that way Rose can just be the backup point guard all season long. I know Wade hasn't really played point guard since he was a rookie, but that doesn't really matter because LeBron's the point guard.
Right.
And that's just the way this league works. I mean, if they wanted, they could just start LeBron as a nominal point guard and go huge. Like we might see those lineups, especially in the playoffs. But the fact they're actually going to start the season like this with Rose and Wade as their starters in the backcourt was not something I was expecting, especially because when they elected to move Kevin Love to center, that seemed like a little bit of a like recognition that the league has changed and they need to do things a little differently. And I think Wade and Rose, that is a backcourt that obviously would have been a lot better in the NBA of 10 years ago, not just because they were so much better then, but because it was a different league.
Yeah, and with the Celtics too, how quickly do you think it's going to take for Kyrie to really sort of assert himself as the guy? And it seems like a guy like Brad Stevens is, if you have this many new players and then you add, you know, you make a blockbuster trade like you did for Kyrie, it seems like Brad Stevens is, I mean, he's an ideal coach for anybody, I think, but he's an ideal coach for this type of situation when you have so many new parts and you have a team that's young and talented and has a lot of room to grow going forward.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with Stevens is like he was a college coach where you're changing players every year. And when he came into the Celtics, they were in this rebuilding mode where Ainge was making all of these trades. The roster was constantly fluctuating. So he's dealt with kind of similar situations, at least. But the Kyrie question is fascinating because I'm not sure I want him to just be the guy. Like, right. I'd want him to basically play the role that Isaiah did last year where, yeah, you can take over a game in the fourth quarter, but he's not just pounding the ball. Like, Isaiah was really good at moving without the ball. He was a really good cutter. He was really good at using screens. And the offense wasn't just all him. Like, Horford did a lot of playmaking. The wings did playmaking. And I think they have more offensive talent now than they did then. So it's even more of a priority for Kyrie Irving to not pound the ball as much as he maybe did in Cleveland. And I thought it was kind of telling. Somebody asked him the biggest difference between Boston and Cleveland, and he just gave one of these short Kyrie Irving answers that he's become known for recently. He's just said ball movement. And that was one of the big questions about Kyrie, was like, would he actually play Celtic style basketball? And I think that's what they want. Like that's at least what I would want to see out of him, is to be a more complete player than he was before, a bit of a more unselfish player than he was before, and not necessarily a guy who's just going to look to score every single time.
Well, I mean, you look at someone like Isaiah Thomas last year, who averaged 28 points a game, but when you watch the Celtics, they weren't exactly feeding Isaiah Thomas, or it wasn't Isaiah just trying to take over games. And if they needed a bucket down the stretch or someone to take over, yeah, then it was. But yeah, the ball moved around, whether it was the post or the wings, out there for a three. And there's just, you never really looked at the Celtics as like, oh, they have that one guy. It was very much, I hate saying a team style of basketball because that just sounds so cliche when people talk about the NBA. But it's definitely different than like the ISO moments that you would see in Cleveland, you know, where LeBron would get a guy one-on-one and then, you know, Kyrie would take his turn too. It just seems like that's going to be a little bit of an adjustment for Kyrie. But, you know, not a, given how talented Kyrie is, that may not be a huge adjustment. And since Brad Stevens is such a good coach and is so well-respected, maybe there's a way that he buys in a little sooner.
Yeah, I think that's the hope. And I think they're, like, just watching them in the preseason, like, I don't know how much you can really read into preseason, but it seems at least like Kyrie is trying to do that. Like, he had, like, 5 assists in the half the other night, which, like, I don't know how many times that happened in Cleveland. And it's interesting because I think there's a lot of pressure on him this year to, like, kind of justify his trade request or demand or whatever you want to call it. But I think what the team is going to challenge him to do, what they want from him, what his coach wants, is to be, like you said, it sounds cliche, but like to be a team player. Like, frankly, I'm not sure he's a better all around player than Gordon Hayward. Like, that guy needs the ball too. And Al Horford needs the ball to maximize the Celtics offense. Like, the reason why they should be good is because they have a whole bunch of high IQ, really skilled players. And historically, the Celtics team under Brad Stevens has had a ton of ball movement, a ton of player movement. They've been really unselfish. They've done, like, they've had good screen setters and stuff like that. Like, that's why Amir Johnson, who they lost, was, like, super important, was because he would set good screens for their guards, and Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas would be, like, wide open. Like, a guy like Aaron Baines is going to be doing stuff like that for them now. And I think the challenge for them is keeping the identity that they had as that kind of unselfish team with a whole new cast of players. And then, of course, remaining, like, tough and scrappy on defense. And that's where I think, like, Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum to a lesser extent are, like, super important for what the Celtics are going to be this season. And in that respect, I've been super impressed by them in the preseason. Smart looks amazing. Like, he dropped a ton of weight. He looks more athletic and his shot looks better. And Jaylen Brown has had a whole bunch of highlight plays and he's, like, guarding point guards a lot of the time. Like, he's doing some of the stuff that Avery Bradley used to do.
All right. So the Wizards are kind of an interesting team because you have that dynamic backcourt. And you still, you know, you still have a couple other young pieces, you know, wing players like, you know, Kelly Oubre, and, you know, they brought back Otto Porter to a huge deal. But I was telling Derek, it seems like if there's something the Wizards are missing, it seems like a stretch four would really help a roster like that, because they do have some really nice pieces, and they figure to be a championship level team, at least a really good team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, like, I wish they could have signed, like, another like, wing guy that can, like, a two-way wing. Like, they're really counting on Porter doing what he did again and Kelly Oubre taking a step forward. Not that I don't mind what they did in the summer. Like, I think Jody Meeks, if he can stay on the floor, being able to shoot from distance and do it as consistently as he does, like, that should help. And Jan Mahimi, if he's healthy, like, I think he may never live up to that enormous contract that he signed last summer, but, like, that can help their bench too. And, like, everybody knows what their issue is, right? Like, their starting five was awesome and their bench was just absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And then they weren't super consistent on defense. And I look at them and I hear what everybody else hears is that they talk really big about how they think the Cavs didn't want to play them and they can be the best team in the East and they have the best backcourt in the East and all that stuff. And I'm just like, all right, like, I just want to see, like, a team that seems more complete than it has the past few years. Like, we know what the backcourt can do. Beal and Wall have proven it in the playoffs. We kind of know how all that works. It's like can Porter build on what he did last year, or was that like the peak Otto Porter? And then like, what can they get out of Kelly Oubre, who like I think has a lot of potential, but then also like for as like good as he can be on defense, like sometimes he was just like almost too active and too aggressive and he'd pick up silly fouls and things like that. Like he needs to become a more mature, better player, a more reliable guy that they can count on. And you're right. I mean, like Morris is really important to them, but it's almost like when you look at what he does, it's like he shouldn't be that important to them. Like when he got hurt in the playoffs against Boston, it seemed like their entire system fell apart. And if they had more stretch bigs, more versatile players, then I don't think that would be as big of an issue. And just the like Jason Smith is shooting like 6 threes a game in the preseason. I don't think that really changes a whole lot.
Yeah, they're really set up interestingly, and it's I mean they're so guard heavy and you know wing heavy too with Porter Oubre as well. But I mean off the bench, I mean it's Donald Sloan. I mean there's a can get buckets at stretches, and same with Jody Meeks. And yeah, I mean you have Martin Gortat still there. And then Jan Mahimi, like you mentioned, and then Marcus Morris. It's such a unique setup because it seems like they're, again, like we talked about for so many years, oh, you know, the center position's dead. The big men are dying. And they don't really rely a ton on their front court aside to, you know, kind of facilitate the other things that the backcourt does. And it's just an interesting dynamic that they have that you don't see a lot around the rest of the NBA.
Yeah, and like Gortat has been really solid for them the past few seasons, but I remember a comment he made last season about Mahimi being there, and like he knows that Mahimi's contract is going longer than his, and like this might be something he has to talk about with management, like what is their plan? And I think they obviously don't need both of those guys, right? And it's just like any Wizards fan can look at that roster and say, oh man, it would be awesome to trade one of the centers for like a couple of wing players. But guess what? Like most of the NBA wants to do the same thing. Almost exactly. Every team has an abundance of centers and not enough on the wing. And that's why you see these wing guys signing these like enormous contracts. Like they're so valuable. And this is just kind of an unfortunate situation that the Wizards have landed themselves in, where they had that money to spend. They didn't get a marquee free agent. So they thought, okay, well, we'll go and get Mahimi. Like he had a pretty good year as a starter for the Pacers. And then it just because of injuries, it was a disaster for him last year. And now they have these two centers when really in the NBA now, like you don't need two centers. Like you really need like half a center. Like you need a big guy that can play some of the game. And then you need to be able to go small.
Now, when I was before that, I was going through the East and I was kind of trying to figure out where teams ranked up and everything. In the first tier, I had the Celtics, Cavs, Wizards, and Raptors. I could not for the life of me figure out to put the Wizards or the Raptors ahead of each other. And I don't know if that's after the better season that the Wizards had last year or the Raptors kind of tailing off a bit at the end. How do you figure where those teams kind of land?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think historically what has made the Raptors, I think, a little better, at least in the regular season, they've been better for the most part, has been their bench. Like they've had these awesome bench units. Some of these guys are gone now, like Patrick Patterson is gone, Corey Joseph is gone, and Kyle Lowry would play with these lineups and they'd be smaller and they would just destroy teams even when the starting five wasn't that good. The Wizards had this starting five that's been awesome and like carrying the team, and then it just they completely fall apart when they go to the bench. And the Raptors are trying a bunch of interesting things this year in terms of reorganizing the offense and prioritizing different sorts of shots, and the jury's out as to how that's all going to work. But I think they and the Wizards are sort of facing a similar problem, is they're hoping that some of these guys on the bench will sort of pop. Like they're hoping they're going to get reliable contributions from guys like with the Wizards. It's like Satoransky and Meeks and Kelly Oubre. And you look at the Raptors and it's like, okay, so what can DeLon Wright do when he's like the main backup point guard? What can rookie OG Anunoby do, who like seems like an awesome prospect, like unbelievable that he fell to them, but maybe it'll take a few years. And they just used to have all of these veterans and these consistent players coming in off the bench, and now the Raptors are relying on a bunch of young guys, and no one knows exactly how the lineups will work. And again, like every other team, they have like way too many centers. Like Serge Ibaka is a center. He's going to start at power forward. He's going to have to play backup center. And then they're going to need to somehow find minutes after him for Jakob Poeltl. Lucas Nogueira last year when he was actually in the rotation was pretty damn good, but I don't really even think he's going to play.
So is he still 2 years away or no?
No, Bruno is the guy who this is supposed to be his year. But I don't know if it actually will be.
I think Matt Moore said, like, oh, is he no longer 2 years away from being 2 years away?
This is the fourth year, so it's supposed to be his time.
I wanted to ask you about the Bucks too, because my concern with the Bucks is, as great as Giannis is, and Brogdon came in as a second round pick last year and got the rookie of the year, and he was great for them. But I worry that the Bucks are going to be that team that, despite having this sort of dynamic, unbelievable unicorn type
player. They're
Jabari
Parker. They feel like they're, once again, a Jabari Parker injury away from kind of another lost season.
Yeah, because it just feels like they're that team that you're going to look and say, yeah, they've got some nice pieces, and they've got this unicorn type player in Giannis, but they're just never really going to be able to get to where they need to get. And I don't know. What's your take on the Bucks?
Yeah, they're one of the more confusing teams to figure out for me, because I've been pretty high on the Bucks the last few years, but I would say more than any team in the NBA, they really disappointed me in the summer. And part of it was not really a fault of like anything, but the situation they were in. Like, they gave out bigger contracts in prior years. Like, they made what I thought were like moves for players that actually fit in pretty well when they went and they got Delly and they got Teletovic the previous summer. But now those contracts don't look that great when you see what happened with the free agents this past summer. Yeah. And it cost them any sort of flexibility. Like, all they could do was go and extend Tony Snell, because otherwise they would have lost him. And I thought they like slightly overpaid for Tony Snell and otherwise brought back the same team. And like, that's just not super exciting. Like, they have Giannis. When they had him and Chris Middleton playing at the same time, they were amazing offensively. You can see that being an awesome foundation. It's really hard to tell how Jabari Parker fits into that, because it was just so few minutes that they could get those three playing together. And Parker is still as amazingly talented as he is on offense. You still don't know if he'll ever be a good defender. You don't know if he'll ever really stretch the floor. You don't know how this whole thing's going to work. And with him, with his injury status, it's just confusing.
What are they going to do with him? I mean, cause they're going to have to figure out his future.
Well,
right?
Embiid just got 5 years and $148 million. So,
yeah, but oh man, like that's the thing. Like the Embiid thing, it's like, well, first of all, like they're heavily protected because of some of the nerdy stuff that was worked into his contract, right? Like that is not fully guaranteed. And maybe you could do something similar with Parker. It's just the problem is, like, we know, like, if Embiid is healthy, he's like an all NBA player.
He's a monster. Like,
like he's unbelievable. He's shown it. And Parker has shown that he's really talented, but it's unclear how his talents kind of fit into a good team structure, right? And especially this team, where they already have Giannis and they already have Middleton, and it's just unclear if those guys all complement each other. So, look, I'm like everybody else. Like, I'm going to be watching the Bucks because I love to watch Giannis Antetokounmpo play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you were to tell me they're the fifth seed versus if you were to tell me they're the eighth seed, like, neither one would particularly surprise me. And I'm not like, when I look at these teams in the East, like who I'm really excited to see, like I'm more excited to like watch how the Heat work than the Bucks. Cause I kind of like, I get what the Bucks are. They're going to be pretty much what they were last year, except maybe Giannis will have a 3-pointer and be even more unstoppable.
When you look at the East, and this was one thing too, I mean, I got to the point where I'm like, after the six, I'm like, well, Miami's probably in that 5-6 range, somewhere in there, just because the rest of the East is just so wide open. I mean, you have the Pacers. I saw they have, what, 7 guys who have a year or less of experience, 5 guys who have 5 or more years.
They're going to be terrible.
Yeah, and that's going to be a weird team. The Hornets, I don't think, are going to be very good, especially with Batum being out for 6 to 8 weeks. The Pistons are a mess. Like, there's just so much there. And, I mean, you could talk me into the Nets, you know, knocking on the door of the playoffs if, you know, things shake up right.
And then the Nets, like, I'd be shocked if they were anywhere near the playoffs personally, but they're fun, man.
Yeah.
And, like, they were actually a fun, bad team last year. Like, I went to a ton of Nets games being in Brooklyn, and they played super fast. They passed the ball like crazy. They turned the ball over like crazy, too, because they weren't super disciplined or organized, but they were trying to play unselfish basketball. Like, they were trying to do an Atlanta Hawks impression from 3 years ago when they won 60 games. It's just they had nowhere near the talent. And that's still kind of the way that they play now. Like, Timofey Mozgov is out there trying to shoot threes the way that Brooke Lopez did last year. Like, they're going to play the same way. They have a more talented team. D'Angelo Russell, I think, has looked really good in the preseason, and I think the big question was how he was going to play with Jeremy Lin, and it looks all right so far. Part of it is they play so fast that there are so many possessions, and they move the ball so much that, like, they each are touching the ball a ton. Like, neither of them is feeling like they're uninvolved and they're just spacing the floor and standing there on the perimeter like the way Lin had to do in Houston or whatever. Like, that's not really an issue. Everybody's involved the way that they play, and they're deep in a weird way in that, like, they don't have a lot of, like, definitely above average players, but they have a bunch of, like, decent role players, and to the point where, like, you look at their guards and you're like, oh, like, so either, like, Isaiah Whitehead, a promising rookie from last year, or Spencer Dinwiddie, who already in my eyes is, like, a pretty good backup guard that plays both ends, like, is going to basically, like, not play. And they're going to have to make weird decisions like that. There's secretly, like, when you actually look at it and you look at, like, Crabbe and LeVert and Rondé, like, they have a bunch of, like, good guards and good wings and guys who should be on the floor. So they might be a little better than some of the projections are saying. I don't know that I totally buy that they're going to really get many stops or be knocking the door of the playoffs. But, like, I'm actually, like, pretty excited to go to their games and watch them. Certainly way more excited about them than about the other team in town.
If Embiid can stay healthy for, I'll sell low here, for most of the season, how good can
this... Retire his jersey immediately. Like, I don't know, like, what is there, like, I don't know what kind of proclamation you could make about Embiid that isn't crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard people say he's the best center in the NBA right now. And I don't know, like, maybe he is. What can't he do? Like, he's this enormous, like, 290-pound, 7-foot guy who is shooting threes, shooting, like, mid-range, like, Dirk-like step-backs, and can face you up, can post up. He's showing this, like, passing ability, which was one of his only flaws last year, that he wasn't really passing the ball. Now he's, like, they're, like, inverting their offense, and he's in the three-point line, and Ben Simmons, their 6'10 point guard, is in the post, and Embiid is setting him up. Like, there's so little that he can't do. He is super talented. The lineups that were productive last year with him and a bunch of below average players are now, like, if those lineups were good, now you have him playing with, like, an amazing shooter in JJ Redick, who is going to be able to use his screens and be able to play off him super well. And I look at that roster and I said it over the summer, I think they can be a playoff team. I still think that. You said, like, it's all about whether or not he's healthy, because the second that he's not there, it's a very, very different story. But I don't know. He played one preseason game. He played, like, 15 minutes and got to the foul line 18 times. Like, if you watch him do
that,
like, I don't know how you can't be, like, super stoked to watch them this year.
Yeah, I just look at – I mean, he's – special, obviously, but then you're throwing Ben Simmons into the fold now. We're going to see him for the first time. You know, you've got Fultz now, and they went and got Redick. You still got
Covington. They got a lot of nice veterans around those young guys, and that's something. I mean, being following the Timberwolves, Manny,
right?
You know, we saw for the last couple of years just how nice it would be to have productive veterans and guys who know how to play. You know, guide the guys on the court, because, like, when Tayshaun Prince and Andre Miller were here, they weren't really here. I mean, they weren't able to really lay things out the way, you know, like a Jimmy Butler or Jeff Teague is.
Yeah.
And to have a guy
Andre
like,
Miller was not happy to be there.
No, he was too old for that bleep.
Like Amir Johnson and JJ Redick chose to go there.
Yeah.
They wanted to be around that team, and I think they're going to be really good there. And Covington is not this like young dude that they plucked out of the D League anymore. Like, he's one of the best defenders in the NBA,
yes,
and he's
I
been doing
him.
This for a few mm-hmm. years and knows the culture. Like, this isn't like they're going to have some young guys playing heavy minutes, and they're obviously like two guys out of their starting lineup never played an NBA minute before. But it's not like these guys are all learning the NBA game. Like, they have some guys with a moderate amount of NBA experience and a couple guys with a lot. And even a guy like Dario Saric, I mean, this is his second year, but he has a really mature floor game. And Simmons is kind of the same way, right? Like, you watch him in the preseason and he looks super comfortable. And I get it if the game gets ugly and it's a half court game and people are playing off of him, then he won't look as good and free as when he's running around in the preseason and nothing really matters. But I still think he's the kind of high IQ player that should be able to fit in relatively well and make that transition, especially after watching the first year and working on his body. Like, he is enormous now. Like, you compare him, like what he looks like now to what he looked like at LSU, it's like it's a whole different guy.
Yeah, it was interesting too, because, you know, me and Derek were talking before we started taping, and you know, we were talking about the Sixers, and you know, we were just naming off names of, yeah, you know, Redick's there, and you know, they have Embiid and Simmons, we're gonna see him, and Fultz and Covington, all these guys, and then like a couple minutes go by, and I thought, and I said to Derek, I said, we just listed off all these guys with the Sixers that are gonna be like really cool to see play together, and we didn't even mention Jahlil Okafor, the guy that was, you know, a top three pick just a couple of years ago. I mean, it's unbelievable just how far that he's sort of fallen, and it's disappointing because we're looking at him at Duke and we're like, man, this guy has got...
Aside from Coach K having to sub him out on the defensive end. Yeah,
right.
I mean, just
yeah.
offensively what he could do, and he had... James, did you see that comment today, or I think it was yesterday, and I'm paraphrasing here, about how he doesn't feel like he's really part of the culture and this or that.
Yeah.
It's just amazing how much talent there.
Did you guys read that story by Jordan Brenner? Like, that was a really good story with Jahlil Okafor. You rarely hear a guy be that honest and blunt about their struggles, like, before they've gotten out of them, if that makes sense. Like, he sounded like a guy who, like, was talking about this, like, rough start to his career like 10 years later, but he's,
yeah.
he hasn't got out of it, and he was being super honest about it.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. I mean, you know, but I don't know, and I don't know if you have what they have. I mean, what do you, if you're the Sixers, what do you do with him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is just sort of what they have been doing. Like, he lost a ton of weight in the summer. I think he still has that offensive skill that everybody knows. He needs to use his passing ability that he showed at Duke more.
Yeah.
He needs to be in the right position more often on defense. Like, everybody knows, like, until he becomes at least a decent defender and a decent rebounder, it's going to be hard for him to stay on the court. And because of the way their roster is constructed, they don't have to play him.
Right.
But I think what they're going to do is they're going to bring him off the bench and they're going to try to play him in short stints and hope that he's impressive enough that, you know, either he carves out a role there, I think unlikely, or he increases his value around the league. And everybody knows how close they were to trading him last year. They told him to stay home, and it was super weird.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen. And I kept thinking it was going to happen over the summer, and it just didn't happen. And it's an awkward situation for everybody involved. But I think you just keep giving him limited minutes and get him a chance to, like, show the league that he's a different guy than he was. And I think it honestly is really impressive how he's transformed his body. Big thing with, like, there's like half a dozen players in the league who went vegetarian or vegan in the summer. He's one of the guys that went vegan, and you can see it. Like, there's just even though the anticipation isn't there on defense, and that's still a huge issue, like, he's at least able to move better, and he's still super young. I think if you are a rebuilding team, like if you are the Bulls or the Pacers or like Atlanta, like any one of these teams, like, why not throw something Philadelphia's way to try to give this guy a shot. I mean, he's super talented. We know that. And if you can, you don't have to be like a great defender, but if you can just not be awful, then I still believe he can be useful.
My only problem with the Indiana rumor last year was that they have Al Jefferson off the bench and they have LaVoy Allen, or I don't know if they still have him, but that's just a lot of back to the basket guys who don't stretch the floor to have, you know, at the plant coming off the bench at the same position.
I remember Larry Bird wanted to play faster too going into last season.
Yeah. No, I mean, but I mean, like, okay, so Al Jefferson is there. And it's funny. He's another guy that he's went vegetarian, lost a bunch of weight, and there was basically the same story written in Charlotte like 3 or 4 years ago.
End up
but
here
this
too.
Is, yeah, and I just look at him there. I'm like, what is the point of Al Jefferson on that roster? This team is years away from competing for anything. If you can get like the younger version of Al Jefferson and try to rehabilitate him rather than rehabilitating the 31-year-old, like that, you do that, in my opinion.
Because this is what, Al's 14th year since he came out? Since he was he was 05, wasn't he?
He was 05. Well, no, maybe he was a year before that. Because I don't know, we'd have to look up the
But yeah, James, I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, what sense is there for a team that's rebuilding to try to, you know, teach an old dog new tricks like that? You know, a guy who's so set in his ways when you still have someone who's young. I mean, Jahlil Okafor is only 21 years old. He turns 22 on December 15th.
Yeah.
So he's still pretty malleable. And yeah, I think
that's the thing he was complaining about in the interview, is he was saying with these other young guys, people point out their flaws and say, but he's only 20, he's only 21, and no one ever does that with him. So
yeah,
we're doing that while also pointing out like those flaws have been very obvious, and they've been what have prevented him from being a productive NBA player so far, despite the fact he had this pedigree and was drafted so high.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, let's ask you about the Wolves before we let you go. Certainly a busy offseason, so many new players now. And Tom Thibodeau, I think with this offseason, finally got a chance to put together the roster that I think he's really wanted to have since he took over, you know, last summer. What are your thoughts on the offseason, and what are your expectations for them going into this year?
It's been kind of strange watching the evolution of like Wolves takes over the past few months because it was like Minnesota's won the draft. Minnesota's won the summer. Oh my God. Look at what this front office did. And then like the closer and closer we've gotten to the season, it's like, I feel like people have gotten more and more pessimistic over what they did. Like, oh, why couldn't they have gotten more shooting? Like, oh, why did they get these old guys and all this stuff? And I get it. But I still look at where they were last year and I look at the roster now and I think their world's better. Now, the West is also so much better.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at the teams beyond the top four and you're trying to pick who will get in the playoffs, like I think most people have the Wolves in, but I think if you have them out, that's not like insane or insulting or anything, because that's just how good the West is. And I look at them and I think they're going to be tough as hell. I think they're going to be really annoying to play against. And I think I actually went back and I saw something I wrote at the end of last season. I did like a story about called like course corrections. It was like teams that need an attitude adjustment going into the next season. Like not necessarily about team needs, like you need a point guard. Like you need, like I had for some teams, like they needed to be like tougher, or for some teams they needed, like the Knicks, I said, needed to like show some actual like organizational humility or whatever. And like for the Wolves, I saw like they needed to play with more discipline. They needed to have more of a Thibodeau like identity, and they needed guys that could kind of teach Towns and Wiggins and LaVine, if he was coming back at that point, like who was going to like how to play like the style that like really translates to winning in the NBA. And if you look at the guys that they got, like it's kind of perfect, right? Like it's not the stretchiest roster. You're going to need Teague and Wiggins and Butler to like shoot a little bit better than their averages over the past few years, probably.
Right.
But I think defensively they're going to be really good. And if the offensive system works in a way that everybody like buys into and people are willing to live with having fewer shots than they got previously, then I think it can really work.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Jeff Teague? Because Jeff Teague has kind of been, since they signed him, he's been, at least from the fan standpoint, very polarizing because
he's not Ricky Rubio.
Because he's not Ricky Rubio. And yes. And Ricky, you know, I loved Ricky, but I understood the idea of wanting to move on from him and going to a different direction. But it was, you know, Jeff Teague, to a degree, it was kind of a tough sell, I think, to the fan base here when they signed him, because
he knows.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Because, you know, yeah. Because he's not Ricky. But I feel like Jeff Teague is, he might not be better overall than Ricky Rubio, but I feel like he's a better fit for what Tom Thibodeau wants to do offensively than what Ricky was. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, if they want playmaking to come from other guys and like you're not that reliant on Rubio's passing, then I get it. I think it's sort of funny because like what you just described is really similar to what Teague just went through last year.
Yeah.
When like he replaced George Hill, who is like one of the best point guard defenders in the NBA, who's also one of the few guys that can play point and then also guard twos and threes. Like a super tough guy, does not need the ball in his hands, can stretch the floor, was like a perfect fit next to Paul George and like was a big part of them having a great defense. You come in and you put Teague in there, and like it was a rough adjustment at first. He had a pretty poor start to the season, and I think the fans were really down on him. But then over the course of the year, Teague played really well, and you look at some of the numbers and it was one of the better statistical seasons of his career, but nobody really talked about that much because nobody really cared what was happening in Indiana. It was this kind of weird team that didn't have an identity and they weren't exciting in any way. And I think people kind of look at Teague and they think he's a little boring and they're not super excited about him. And like, he's not going to be as good a defender as Rubio was, obviously. He's not going to be the passer that Rubio was, obviously, but I think he is a good drive and kick player. And he is a guy that, while isn't like super stretchy, is a guy that can hit a big three-pointer. And I think down the stretch of games, like the Wolves have had trouble.
Yeah.
Not just last year, over the past few years.
Going back to Kevin Love.
Yeah. Some of it has been because in a half-court game, Rubio just isn't quite as effective. And if they think Teague is going to fix that problem, then like I get why they did it. I'm sort of playing both sides of this here because I think Teague is a good player, but like I was sort of sad to see Rubio leave as well.
Sure.
And like given the circumstances, it wasn't like they got Teague on this amazing bargain and suddenly it made most sense. Like, no, they paid a lot for him. And I think it's just the kind of thing where they thought it was time. Like they thought it was time for a change at that position, and they were sort of trying to define like the next era of what Wolves basketball is. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how he balances his instincts in terms of being aggressive versus setting up other guys. Because I think when he was with Atlanta, it was like that perfect storm a few years ago where he was getting his, but then also he was setting up Kyle Korver and setting up Millsap and Horford. And it was a sort of like beautiful, like democratic system. And I don't know that the Wolves have like the spacing to play that kind of pretty. But if they can at least play with that spirit, and if everybody can feel involved at the same time and he can kind of conduct that, then that's cool. And you live with the downgrade defensively if that's the case.
I wanted to ask about Andrew Wiggins. I don't know how much you've caught of Wolves preseason this year so far, but I know a lot of the talk, you know, well, if Wiggins' his upside could be DeMar DeRozan, and a lot of fans around here are like, oh, great. I mean, what are your thoughts on, you know, what you've seen from Wiggins maybe this preseason? I mean, he looks bigger this year. I mean, it looks like he's maybe grown an inch or two, and he's filled out his frame a little more. What have you seen from him so far?
Well, can I address the DeRozan thing?
Sure, absolutely.
Because all right, in there. So I think the parallel, because like, look, I spent most of my life in Toronto, moved to Brooklyn a year ago. So I saw the whole evolution of DeRozan, and I saw people change their opinions on him when he became more successful, and when he became, like, honestly, a player that was more easy to fit into a winning style of basketball. And he had to round out his game to get there, just like Wiggins would. But I think it was really easy to be cynical about DeMar DeRozan in his first few years. And it was like, to sound smart in a shorthanded way, you could just dismiss him and say, you can't win shooting that style. He'll never be efficient. Those shots that he takes are too difficult. He's focused on the wrong things, blah, blah, blah. And like that, I get that analysis. And like, I understand where it comes from. And look, like, there's a case to be made when you look at some of the struggles he's had in the playoffs that's not totally off base. But he managed to turn himself into a multi-time All-Star, a gold medalist, one of the highest scorers in the league, and like an efficient player across the board without really compromising his approach to the game and his style. Like, he just kept getting better at it. He didn't change to fit like the way the league was changing and evolving. He just got better at what he did to the point where opponents had to adjust to his unique style. Like, he got to the line a ton. Defenses had to play him for the mid range when people double team him, then he got rid of the ball. And I think it was interesting being in Toronto and seeing people kind of have to reckon with the fact that, like, he didn't do the things necessarily that everybody wanted him to, but he still became a really, really good player. And I think the lesson from that, when it applies to Wiggins, it's not that I can sit here and guarantee that Wiggins is going to be this all-around stud in a few years. Honestly, like, DeRozan, like, still heading into this season, people are still like, can he be a better defender this year? Can he be a better passer? And like, those questions are going to persist until he does it. And that the same thing might be true with Wiggins. But I think the lesson is, being cynical and being pessimistic about his growth of a player isn't like inherently smarter than being optimistic. Like, if you're going to talk about the areas where Wiggins struggles, the advanced stats that show that he's not helping as much as the eye test might suggest and all that, like, you also should be talking about the talent that he has, the athleticism that he has, the skills, the moves that are in his arsenal. I think, like most people, when watching him, I've been frustrated that he hasn't been more efficient. Even though he's been given like a superstar's workload in terms of usage, but hasn't quite justified it. But I think if that's just a step in his growth, and eventually he gets there, then that's okay. And I think the contract, he's not a max player right now, but that was the market, and that's the risk that they took. And I understand it, because I think he's still an extremely high upside player, and there hasn't been definitive proof so far that he won't reach it.
And you get the sense, too, that a guy like Jimmy Butler being there is going to help him, too, in just in terms of, you know, pushing him to sort of reach that, you know, potential that he has. I mean, they're similar players in terms of their playing style, and they kind of play the same position, and that, you know, that whole thing can be debated. But I just feel like Jimmy being there and Jimmy still being a good player, himself and not being an over-the-hill guy, but he's still a veteran guy who had to really work his tail off to become the player that he is now. I feel like having Jimmy there will really help Wiggins too.
Yeah, it's really interesting the kind of the journey that Jimmy's gone on compared to Wiggins. It's like the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Like Butler came in so unheralded, got on the floor entirely because of his defense, didn't even really want the ball and didn't care about that. And he just from like the start had that intensity about him, had that competitiveness about him. And it was shocking when he added all these offensive things to his arsenal. And when he became a guy that could run pick and rolls the way that he can, when he became a guy that could score as easily off the dribble and that could find open guys, like that wasn't anything that anybody saw from him over the first couple of years. And now you're taking Wiggins, and he came in with a lot of the stuff that Butler developed later. And now you're asking him to kind of get the stuff that Butler came in with, right? Like you're asking him to be that really dogged defender, to be that intense guy, to never get tired, to like be that focused and locked in and all of that, and be demonstrative, like stuff that like back in high school, like I remember articles about Wiggins when he was like 16, 17 years old in Canadian publications saying like the one thing people doubt is like, can he ever be a leader? He seems really shy. He can disappear for times on the court and all of that stuff. Like this is still stuff that he has to work on. It's like the complete opposite end of the spectrum. But I do think that looking at the player Butler has become in full in terms of like the offensive package and then all the unbelievable things he brings defensively and when it comes to intangibles and all that, like that is like you could not ask for a better model. Like the idealized version of Andrew Wiggins would look a lot like Jimmy Butler, just more athletic.
All right. Karl Anthony Towns, the guy who, I mean, everybody loves and I mean, we all love him here, and he's, I think, you know, this offseason with all the moves the Wolves have made, everybody anticipates the Wolves being better, so now everybody's expecting Towns to take another big leap, even though he took a pretty significant leap offensively, at least last year. What do you think of him, and how, I mean, how good is he really going to be, especially this year with all the new players going into this season?
I mean, if he just sustains what he did at the end of last year on offense, then I don't know what, like, you can't ask for much more than that, right? Like, he was unbelievable in the second half of the season. And I think a lot of people, like you guys know this, but I think people outside of Minnesota, they just look at last year and they think of how they had such high expectations and they stumbled at first and they think, like, that was the only story, is that they didn't live up to expectations. But, like, Towns got so much better over the course of the year. And I thought late in the year, he actually, like, he wasn't playing great defense, but I thought he was better than he was at the start. It's nothing revolutionary to say that, like, this guy has all world talent, that he could make an all NBA team this year. Like, it wouldn't be surprised if he was on the All-Star team, even though the West is insane, like, especially in the front court. But I mean, to me, what you're really looking for is how he fits in defensively. Like I know he can do pretty, like it's, he's sort of like Embiid on offense. Like there's basically nothing that he can't do. So like the challenge on that end is just fitting in with everybody else, like the same way we talked about with Teague. But on defense, it's like, you know, like Butler's a good model for Andrew Wiggins. Like Taj Gibson is like smaller and different, but like he's a pretty decent model for Karl Anthony Towns. Like if he had Gibson's sense of like timing and anticipation and how to fit into a team concept, like physically all his attributes are better. So like you want him to learn from him and you just want him to make progress. And it often takes bigs like years to become true rim protectors, and especially guys in the back line. Like Thibodeau wants Towns like calling out plays and directing other people and doing all of that stuff. Like, was DeAndre Jordan doing that in his third year? No, he was just trying to block every shot that came in. And now if you look at him, he's one of the best defenders in the NBA. So
yeah.
I think like it is so easy to get ahead of yourself with Towns because of how talented he is. Like he's almost earned that. And I think some people just felt kind of burned by saying last year, like, oh, he's going to be in the MVP discussion, blah, blah, blah. We've never seen a rookie season this good, so who knows how good he can be now. And, like, last year wasn't actually disappointing. Like, he was great last year. Like, he was better than the year before. He was incredible at the end. And I think if he just builds on that, like, that would be fine.
James, we could probably talk for 6 hours. And, you know, me and Derek, we say this all the time with all of our guests, that we could probably
go on
and on.
But it's always sincere.
Yeah, and it's totally sincere that we could just go on and on about, you know, every team in the NBA and beyond with you. We appreciate the time so much. And we got to have you on again soon. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun. Thanks for having me.
All right, James Herbert from CBS Sports. And it's a good get, Derek.
Yeah, no, that was a great conversation.
Yeah, that was great.
And the funny thing is I tell our guests about 20, 30 minutes, and there we go. We're just under an hour now. So,
yeah.
Whoops, my bad, James.
Yeah. But, yeah, that was great. And, you know, I mean, the Wolves are it's just going to be fun, man. I don't really know what else to say at this point, as, you know, we're just
well,
really
one
just
reason
waiting for
I did
want to
get James on was that I knew that he had seen DeRozan kind of come from rookie and, you know, crescendo to the player that he is now.
Yeah.
And so that perspective was great. And I think maybe reassuring to some fans where it's, you can't see the future. There's no crystal ball to see where these guys are going to be. It's like Sam Mitchell said, you can't just fast forward to when these guys are 25 years old and you can know for sure that they're going to be a finished product. They're going to be this, that, or the other thing. You have to wait and kind of bide your time there. Sometimes that means just being patient. And I think too, pointing out that you look at this roster compared to last year's,
better.
Yeah, and guys who, you know, coming off the bench that actually do want to play and do want to be there, I think that's going to make a big difference. Having Jamal Crawford, you know, hopefully motivated Shabazz Muhammad this time around. And, I mean, having Gorgui Dieng come off the bench, I mean, how great is that going to be? You know, you can have Gorgui Dieng high-fiving Taj Gibson as he comes into the game and vice versa.
Right.
I mean, that's depth.
And I'm telling you, if this Taj Gibson hitting corner threes, if this is going to become a regular thing, I don't know if it will or not. Because Taj has never been a three-point shooter before.
Marcus Gasol wasn't before last year, and he started raining threes at like 33 years old. So
yeah, I mean, if this is gonna be a thing for Taj, and he's gonna be good at it, then hey, this is gonna be fun, man. It's gonna be fun. First game in San Antonio on the 18th. It's less than a week away, and then the home opener against Utah on Friday the 20th with Ricky Rubio returning to town. I think that was kind of by design. I think when the NBA made that schedule.
Really? Just like Celtics and Cavaliers is opening night? And then what? Is it Knicks Thunder opening night or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, I'm so glad the NBA's back. Man, I missed it.
We're so close.
Thanks to James Herbert for joining us this week. Thanks to you for listening. Find the Raised by Wolves podcast on iTunes, give us a favorable rating. We'll appreciate that.
Like, favorable, really close, 5-star.
Yeah, exactly. you can find us at podcast1.com as well, and of course, 1500ESPN.com. For Derek, I am Manny. Thanks for listening. Wolves season less than a week away. We'll talk to you next week.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning architectural shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money.